Good morning, everyone. Really is warming my heart to see so many of you in person. That was just really exciting to be able to be together, to sit together. I wish we had time to just sit down and talk with each of you and with each of you that are at home and ask you how you're doing, how you're processing all of the events that are happening in the world right now, things that are happening in your life. Does it preoccupy you? How do you make sense out of it? What's going on for you? I would so love to hear those stories that each of you have right now. As I was preparing this homily, I remembered feeling like this a couple of years ago. It was a Memorial Day weekend, and you know, as we always do, as the winter ends, we so look forward to that time when we can get out in the garden and have a barbecue and the sun shining, and I had all the anticipation for that weekend. And I got out Saturday morning, and I started to garden, and all of a sudden, I felt this sharp pain in my back. And I thought, what was that? And then it just seemed to get worse, and it was difficult to move, and didn't feel good. And so, you know, I do what most of us do. I got on the internet and Googled sore back, you know, try to figure out what's going on. Should I put heat on it, ice on it? What should I do? Got up the next morning, I just couldn't move at all. I couldn't even walk. And then I started to feel depressed, angry. My husband was very good to me, but I think he was getting a little tired of grumpy Mary around the house, you know. Finally, about 2 o'clock, I had a brilliant idea. I should pray about this. Now you would think, maybe I would think of this sooner, but no. 2 o'clock on Sunday. So I quieted myself down and I just said, God, what do you want me to learn from this? And the answer came, boom, just like that. I want you to think about others in this situation. If it's hard for you, how hard is it for them, those who are confined to beds, alone in their rooms? As soon as I heard that message, I did as God has directed, and I began to think about them. And that's when my back began to heal. I think in the scriptures today, the disciples must have also wavered between being stuck in their own stuff, their own thinking, and listening to God. They are following Jesus. They've left their families, their jobs, their fishing, everything they were doing. And in last week's scripture that Father Jim preached on, Peter had a great moment when he recognized that Jesus was the Christ, and Jesus said, yes, and here are the keys to my kingdom. I give them to you. But this week doesn't go as well for Peter. It's the other side of the coin. This week, Jesus tells them that he's going to suffer, that he's going to die, he's going to be crucified. And Peter becomes very protective and very fearful. He doesn't want Jesus to die. He doesn't want to be left alone. And so he says, Jesus, that will never happen to you. And Jesus responds, get behind me, Satan. You are an obstacle to me. What? Last week, Peter gets the keys to the kingdom. This week, get behind me, Satan. What a difference in the two responses. Jesus says to Peter, you are thinking like a man, not like God. What is the difference? What is thinking like a man, and what is thinking like a God? I don't know if I can personally tell you how you can think like a man, but we can talk about thinking as a human being, I think. Peter, the human being, is concerned for his safety and for Jesus' safety. He's concerned for their well-being, that they have enough to eat, that there's a place to sleep, that they're popular, that they have enough money. Peter, the follower of Christ, is thinking about different things. He's thinking, what is my purpose? How do I share God's love? And he's more than thinking. He's connected to God, and in that connection, he experiences love, forgiveness, and healing. When Jesus says to Peter, get behind me, he's telling Peter, remember, Peter, I am the leader. You are following me. Don't tell me what to do. Follow me. Listen to me. Let me be the guide. Jesus calls Peter's thinking an obstacle. An obstacle. And sometimes our thinking is an obstacle. It can be an obstacle to God, and it can be an obstacle to us. In the 12-step recovery program, relying on a higher power is essential to serenity and seeing new options. And a common question asked by a sponsor to a sponsee in that program would be, if you had sought the guidance of your higher power through stillness and meditation, and if you had set your ego and agenda aside, how do you think you would have spoken? How would you have behaved differently? How would the results be different? That's a powerful question for us to ask ourselves in different situations. The person who shared this with me, who's in this program, said to me, for him, the answer always is, I would have listened more and spoken less. I would have had more patience and compassion. I would have said what I meant without saying it in a mean way. I would have been able to agree or disagree and not be angry about either. The key to seeking the guidance of our higher power comes in the word stillness. Silence is necessary for us to listen to God. God cannot be found in noise and restlessness. God is the friend of silence. If we go outside and look at nature, we can see how the trees and the flowers and the grass thrive in silence. We can see how the stars and the moon and the sun move in silence. The more we sit in silent prayer, the more we can give in our active life. The essential thing is not what we say, but what God says to us. To think like God, we need to stay connected to God, to be still, to listen to his guidance, to bring God's presence into our daily life. There's an author by the name of Eckhart Tolle who writes about living in that consciousness of God. He gives us three ways to be conscious in our living. The first is basic and simple but necessary, and that is acceptance. To be conscious and accept the things that we have no control over, and there are many things in our life that we have no control over. If you're riding down the road and you get a flat tire, now you are in the area of acceptance. You're not going to feel excited about that. You're not going to think, wow, I'm so lucky I have a flat tire. But you accept it. You have no choice. And there are many things like that. If you have a baby that wakes you in the middle of the night, you have no choice. You get up and take care of that baby, whether you want to wake up or not. If you're caring for an elderly parent, you take care of their needs. If you're cut back at work and lose some pay, you accept what's happened. Or maybe you're working during this pandemic at the hospital and there's no time off. Is that what you want? No. But you accept it. You do. It's not in your control. If you're in a hurricane, that's not in your control. If someone you love has died of COVID, that's not in your control. There are things in life we accept, we have to accept, and we have to do it willingly, to accept it peacefully. It is what we have to work with. I love Dr. Fauci. He's an amazing guy, right? This Dr. Fauci. He's so committed to giving us the news for our health, and yet last March, the White House stopped him from speaking to major news medias. He was no longer allowed to respond to any major news media requests. He's still not allowed to. Did he want that? No. But he did not waste any energy fighting back. He simply increased his availability to small media outlets like the Harvard Press and local newspapers and podcasts. He is so popular with them that he speaks many times, 5 times a day. And the major news outlets find his comments and broadcast them. He accepted the situation that he was given, and out of it, he was creative. Learning how to accept things requires at times creativity. It's not a passive acceptance, it's an active acceptance. It takes creativity to accept, to realize that this is part of my life and that there is something here for me to learn. A second way to be awake is when acceptance becomes something that we enjoy, when we become alive in the moment of it. When we enjoy what we are doing, we are in the present moment. When we are focused on what we are doing, it's like playing a violin. You don't play a violin thinking about your finances or your laundry. You play a violin with all of your passion. You just focus on that. And we don't have to wait to enjoy life. Sometimes we think we do. We think, well, when the kids get a little older, or when I get a raise in my work, or when summer comes, that's when I'll enjoy life. As soon as I turn that corner, that's when I'll start enjoying life. But enjoying life is not about a certain time. It's not even about what you are doing. It's about what you bring to what you are doing. We bring the joy to the activity that we are involved with. We can find joy in things because they are meaningful to us. John Lewis, the famous congressman who recently died, he was an activist in his time, beaten for protesting racial inequities, was known for his smile. He said, "Even though I was arrested, I smiled because I was on the right side of history." John Lewis was thinking like God. Jesus said, "Blessed are you who are persecuted for righteousness, for yours is the kingdom of heaven." When I was on that Memorial Day weekend, I thought about people who were confined to beds. I thought of many parishioners, people that I visited off and on. And I thought to myself, I really need to visit some of them. I need to understand what it means to accept and enjoy life. One of the people I saw that week was Carolyn Barone. She was at Monroe Community Hospital. She was my age and was confined to a bed most of the day as she could not use her limbs anymore. So I went to see her, and she was sitting outside in a wheelchair. We talked about books. We talked about kids and family and past adventures. And when it came time for me to leave, she said, "Thank you so much for coming." I said, "Carolyn, I have to tell you the reason that I came. It was because this Sunday I hurt my back and I couldn't move at all, and I was thinking of you. And I thought, how do you do this every day?" When I said that to her, she immediately began to cry. She told me how difficult it was, how the hardest thing was every morning she would wake up at 6 a.m. with the sun pouring in, and she could hear the birds outside. But she said her aide doesn't come in until 9:30. So she had to wait for 3.5 hours every morning before she could get up. So I asked her, "Do you get really frustrated?" And she quickly said, "No, I don't. I can't change it, because I can only sit up for a few hours a day anyway. And these are good people. I try to make every day better by appreciating them." And then she said one last thing. She said, "Mary, thank you for asking how it is for me." Carolyn died a few years ago. But before she died, she had found a way to go beyond accepting her situation to enjoying her situation. She enjoyed it by being present to the people who were there with her. by being present to the moments she had where she could experience aliveness in the very act of sitting up in a chair. There is a spiritual practice that we can do for ourselves to help us to become more like Carolyn in our acceptance of what happens in our life. Make a list. Go home and write down the activities that you're involved in, the things that are going on in your life. Include the ones that are uninteresting or boring or even tedious. Maybe things like answering email or talking on Zoom or wearing a mask. Whatever it is for you that you really don't like doing. But when you are doing these things, try to be totally engaged in them. Don't think about what you did yesterday or what you're going to do tomorrow. Just focus on the activity itself. Give all your mind to that moment. If you're folding clothes, think about the feel of the cloth and how you like to wear that item. If you're Zooming with a client, be aware of the amazing technology and give all your attention to the person on the screen. If you're wearing a mask, wear one that you like and have fun smiling at people with your eyes. You will experience a sense of aliveness in you. It's an aliveness about being connected to a consciousness that's so much bigger than you, and you're bringing all of that to that moment. Some people are able to do that in their daily lives because they have a passion for what they do. And we love to be around those people, right? Our musicians, we love to be around them. Our artists, our writers, our scientists, our hikers, our auto mechanic, people who are passionate about what they do. But you know, they're just ordinary people. It's not that they're extraordinary, they are ordinary. What we see in them as extraordinary is that they are letting that passion come through them. This is available to each of us, no matter what we do. The Persian poet Hafiz says, "I am a hole in a flute that the Christ's breath moves through." Listen to his music. I am a hole in the flute. When you let God move through you, you are in that third stage of consciousness, enthusiasm. Enthusiasm comes from the word entheos, in God, to be filled with God. Like an arrow moving toward a target where you know your purpose and your meaning and you head for it. With enthusiasm, you don't have to do it all by yourself. You're not alone being enthusiastic. There's a spirit that's moving in you. Jesus said, "I can of my own self do nothing." And we also can of our own selves do nothing. The important things that we do with the Spirit moving through us. I think we all remember that moment several years ago where they had a Special Olympics, and the children running in that Special Olympics were physically and mentally challenged, but they were running the race, and one of the children fell down, and the other children stopped. They didn't continue. They stopped. They went back. They helped her up. They all joined hands, and they ran across that finish line together. They had a goal where they were going, but they were filled with the power of love that was much bigger than running on the track. With enthusiasm, there are no winners or losers. Enthusiasm and the ego cannot coexist, because enthusiasm wants nothing because it lacks nothing. It's the spirit moving within us. Another visit I made that week was to a woman who's limited in her ability to go out and do things on her own. She was taken from her family at an early age and placed in a very unhappy foster care. Her name is Constance. When I went to see her, she said, "You know what? I'm really excited about this summer. I'm going to go to my high school reunion." I said, "Well, how many years is it?" 42, she said. I'm going to my high school reunion in Brockport. I want to see the kids that beat me up when I was in high school. They what? I said. She said, yes, they beat me up almost every day. I said, Constance, that's terrible. It was terrible, she said. They should have known better because they knew my father was poor. So I asked her, Constance, what will you say to them? She said, well, I know it's hard to live knowing you have done something like that to somebody else. I want to tell them that I am okay and that I forgive them. Constance understands entheos, being in God. She's enthusiastic about going to the reunion because she has something moving through her that is going to bring the people there to God. She's going to bring God's forgiveness. She's thinking God's thoughts. God is here. She is present in the stillness, in the people, in the presidential election, in the pandemic, in the protests. God is present in everything that is happening. I was so moved this week by the words of Julia Jackson. She is the mother of Jacob Blake, who was shot in Kenosha, Wisconsin. The victim's family is asking for justice, but his mother, Julia, asked for something else as well. She said this, "As I have prayed for my son's healing, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, I also have been praying, even before this, for the healing of our country." She said, "We are the United States. Have we been united? Do you understand what's going to happen when we fail? Because a house that is against each other cannot stand." To all of the police officers, she said, "I am praying for you and your families." To all of the citizens, to my black and brown sisters and brothers, I am praying for you. I believe that you are each an intelligent being, just like the rest of us. Everybody, let's use our hearts, our love, and our intelligence to work together to show the rest of the world how humans are supposed to treat each other. America is great when we behave greatly. Julia Jackson is God's voice for us. She is allowing God's voice to be like the hole in the flute, to speak through her. Jesus tells us today to think as God thinks. Don't let our human thinking become an obstacle to being a messenger of love in the world. Jesus tells us, "Observe what I have commanded. Be still. Reflect. Don't worry." He tells us, "I want to bring you joy, and everything I have is yours. You and I are one." And remember, Jesus says, "I will be with you always, even until the end of time."